Hello, fellow game explorers. Thanks for joining us on this week's Brief Expedition. These are Which Game First's mini episodes where we excavate news and tidbits from the world of gaming. The next full episode of Which Game First is unearthed in a week. And if you want even more new episodes, become a patron today, where you can get access to supporter-only episodes regularly. Just go to our website at whichgamefirst.com and click on Become a Supporter. I'm here with the whole panel today. Evan.
Hello.
Mike.
Hi, hi, hi.
Ed.
What's up?
And Joe.
Greetings, everyone.
This week, we're recapping our visit to the CT Festival of Indie Games. That's the Connecticut Festival of Indie Games, where we met a bevy of designers and game developers.
A whole bevy. Yep. At least a bevy, if not a bevy and a half.
Yeah. Mike and Ed and I attended. Joe and Evan are ready with questions. So where was CT Fig this year?
Well, CT Fig was at the Connecticon, a festival that's held in Hartford, Connecticut.
Yeah, it was a big con. They call Connecticon a fandom convention. Is that right?
That seems right, yeah.
Yeah, it was heavily attended. I know both parking garages I tried to park in were full, yeah, so I had to park in an overflow lot. There was quite a line to get my badge on Saturday.
Me and Ed were vendors, so we got to skip that whole crazy line. Smooth sailing.
You were vendors inside the Indie Festival, which was inside Connecticon, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And you were playtesting your current game in development for Angry Ducks, right?
Yeah, we were there on official business, showing off our new game, Bad Juju, which is still in development. And we also have a game that was on the shelf that we were able to sell called Student Bodies.
I played it actually with my son Max while we were there. It was Carnage.
Yes.
Zombie Carnage.
It's one of those games where sometimes the players don't all get out alive.
No.
Right.
Oh, good game.
Part of the charm.
So there was 26, I believe, game designers or developers promoting games there. We're going to talk about the winners in a little bit. But first, we want to talk about some really interesting games we saw and some delightful experiences we had with meeting game designers and developers. We've got some photos of the festival up on our Instagram, right, Ed?
Yes, they're up.
So you get to see us with the game designers we're about to talk about. The first game we saw was Someone Has Died, which has been funded on Kickstarter and is about to ship. It's by Gather Round Games.
Oh, yeah. This was an awesome game. It's a storytelling game. And the premise is that you're at a reading for a will, I think.
Yeah.
And you're trying to convince the judge basically why you should get the biggest cut of the will. And you're dealt a few cards that you have to work into your pitch. One of them is who you are, like what your job was. A couple of backstory cards. And what was the other type of card? I know there's a fourth.
Connection, right?
Yes, the connection to the person that had died.
Yeah. I was recording this, but as soon as I heard it was a storytelling game, I elbowed my way in and did the promo with Mike.
So is it that you have to make the best case of all the players to earn the inheritance?
Yeah, to get your inheritance, yes.
How's that determined?
So it's subjective.
Role-playing.
Yeah, it's subjective through your role-playing. Basically, it works kind of like a way more complicated apples-to-apples where you have a judge who hears all the statements that people make and then decides, you know, what they want to do.
Yeah, that's not a bad comparison. It gives you a premise and you've got to run with it to impress the judge the most.
Yep, except it has a lot more layers. There's a point where people can also throw in like twists basically to throw the person's story off. Somebody threw one at me that was, you're actually a talking dog, you know. So
I'm the world's only talking dog. I'm part of why he got so wealthy.
The drawings are super simple. And
yeah, they're simple but charming.
But the funny thing is every person in the drawings is naked.
almost naked. They're in some form of undress.
Well, they were born that way, you know.
I think I was playing a psychotherapist or something like that, and he's just a naked guy laying
why
on
is
a
he
psycho
naked?
Couch.
You know, there it's not explicit nudity. It's
no, not at all. You actually know genitalia, nothing like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, nothing just like that.
Very simple drawings.
We don't want you to get the wrong idea here. It's more like Family Guy nudity than, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It was so it's the kind of game where it's up to the players to like really put a lot of life into it, but they gave you a lot of good tools to work with. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. One of the games I really enjoyed seeing, because I am actually a fan of nautical themed games, and we ought to play more of those on this podcast.
We could have a nautical day.
Oh, we should.
But there's one that was in development. The Kickstarter's just launched this past week. So if you want to go and help fund it, it's up now. It's called Clear the Decks by Crispy Games Co. Chris Pinion was the designer, and I got to meet him and talk to him about the game. It's a cooperative game, which I really liked. You each play essentially gunners running a gun deck on a ship against the other ship. The other ship is essentially AI. And it's a card game. So you draw different kinds of shot and you manage different kinds of cannons. And the balance seems like it could be a lot of fun because you're all working together and you can share cards. It made it feel to me like it's going to be a dynamic game.
What was the AI like in it?
It reminded me of Forbidden Island.
Forbidden Island, yeah.
Yeah, the one that Joe brought to the table. It reminded me of Forbidden Island in the...
Not Danger Island. Forbidden Island.
Gotcha. So there was different players had different abilities or something like that?
Yes, they were actually given different kinds of shot. And the cannons are different sizes.
It's like 18-pounders and I think 36-pounders.
You can play 2 to 4, but I think there's a unique setup for a 3-player game for each of them to run a certain weight gun. Set of guns. So I'm really curious to, see how the finished product is going to go. And it's under funding now. That's Clear the Decks. Mike, you played one called Fire Tower.
That was by Runaway Parade Games. One of the designers, her name was Gwen, but I can't recall her last name right now.
I do like that name of the company, though. Runaway.
Runaway Parade.
A parade wasn't, wild enough already.
Yeah, this was an interesting one. So it looks like a board with just a bunch of forest on it with a grid. And then in the four corners are four different, little towers. The point of the game is to move the fire towards the other players' areas and basically get to the corner of their tower to burn it down. Now, when they first made this game, it was supposed to be like a cooperative game where you're all trying to put out a forest fire. But people were like, I want to be competitive with this game and burn each other's towers down.
Were some creative disagreements among the developers, and one thing led to another, and then they actually started burning each other's property down.
So now you're like, instead of putting buckets of water on the board, you're like spreading fire in different ways, and you roll a directional die to see which way the wind is blowing, and you add fire to the board that way. Wow. So it definitely, people's pyromaniac side took over, and they just went with that theme, and it was successful for them. They funded it. So.
Wow.
So the entire table where they were promoting the game was covered with these game pieces that were really neat-looking, fire-colored plastic crystals.
Yeah, they're the kind of crystals you find at like Michael's that go inside of a vase.
Oh, yeah.
And there was just the whole table's full of them.
Now, is that just a prototype or is that going to be in the finished game? Do you know?
I think that's done, actually. I think that game's published.
Oh, it's really, I love those pieces.
Yeah.
They did remind me of Flames.
Yeah, they did. And they were really shiny. I love that.
That's Fire Tower by Runaway Parade. And Ed and I visited Robots Battle for the Coal Heart. Designers Duncan Davis and Jacqueline Goh.
It's pretty cool. It's a robot game. You're built basically a robot using these components. So yeah, you have different components on your arms and legs.
It's a pretty high stakes game.
I mean, I guess it is a battle for the universe, right? So
the winner becomes all powerful.
Pretty much. Yeah, one of the things they said when we were there was that you all think you're the good guy who's going to save the universe. So you're fighting over who gets to be the ultimate good guy. And in the meantime, you're smashing each other's robots.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
I liked it too. I liked the boards. Everybody gets their own individual boards, right, Ed, with their own robot character.
Yep. Yeah. We actually traded one of our games for a copy of that one. So we have one now if you want to play it sometime.
Oh yeah.
Trading games. Good idea.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The names of the robots are really cool. Like Professor Siphon.
I mean, if anybody's got an advantage for getting that coal heart, it's got to be Professor Siphon. Yeah. Or would it be Professor Siphon? Because they're all robots.
I think he sounds smoother like Professor Siphon.
Yeah. So that's Robots Battle for the Coal Heart. It's published already. One of the ones I know you really liked, Mike, was Blinks. And this seemed to be done by some grad students, right? At a university in New York?
Actually, I think they might have, after reading the info online, I think they were sponsored by MIT. It didn't win any awards, but I'm shocked because I thought it was the coolest game there. So they designed these hex-shaped pieces that were electronic. And on the inside of the hex, it had a ring of LED lights that had a color. And as you tap the hex, it would cycle through colors.
Oh.
Sounds simple, right? And you get 8 pieces and you're trying to like rearrange them in shapes. Like when you touch one of your hexes to the other 2 pieces, you tap the hexes next to it and they change color and you're trying to get groupings of the same color. That's kind of a simple game. The pieces were cool, but the really cool thing about this game was there's a device you can buy to actually program the different hexes.
So it's a programming cord.
It's a programming cord that you plug the pieces into, and you can individually program each piece to do different stuff. So one of them can stay red for 10 clicks and then turn blue, or you can have them all do that, or you know, you can create your own games with it. So I thought it was just awesome looking. I don't know. I loved it. It's great for a designer or for somebody who loves to make up their own games to just get those things, program them in all different kind of ways and make all kinds of cool games out of it.
Yeah, I think it would be really fun. And I actually felt, even though it was a simple game, it was a bit of a brain burner to figure out where to place those pieces to get the right colors.
Because the colors are cycling and you know, you kind of lose track of what's going to happen when you move them next to each other.
Right, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, you won by accident once, actually. Like, oh yeah, I just won. Cool.
Right. Ooh, another fun thing we saw were, get ready for it, Evan, Joe. Yeah, scented meeples.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
So is that a game or is that like a product?
It is a product. You are 100% right. Uh-huh. It is. And we will
like sandalwood meeples?
Pine forest.
Yes. Ed, you got it exactly. Ed, make sure there's a photo of me wafting the meeples toward my nose.
Yeah.
They smelled so beautiful. And sandalwood is a great scent to sort of give you an idea of what they smell like. They smell like a relaxing spa.
He treats them with kind of a lemon oil kind of thing that has a sort of citrusy scent to it. And they're shiny and they have all different kinds of wood, like tiger wood and like lighter and darker woods. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, they were beautiful pieces and they stank really pretty. So I enjoyed seeing those. That was a nice little
they stank pretty.
Experience. One of the games I had the most fun with, and the designer was a lot of fun, was Brew Dice. Andy Jeremiah is the designer. This is a fully published game of dice from Fun Whiz Games. And there's another version of it, a sports version produced by Fanzi. But the one I played, Brew Dice, was based on beers. And you roll custom dice with little pictures on them to try and match the pictures on a card that you flip over. First person whose dice matches each piece of the picture wins. Simple as that. They get the card onto the next card. First person of 5 cards wins. Super simple. Really, I thought lots of fun because I was frantically rolling dice, which is one of my basically my favorite thing to do.
Yeah, and I love the sign they had there. Minimal thinking required.
And I understand there's like real micro brews.
The real breweries are in there. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so a great way to promote like little companies.
They also had a pretty interesting, game that you've been poisoned. It was 10-minute escape room experience. It was kind of neat. They had a table set up, and I guess you had to figure out how to get yourself unpoisoned.
I'm so sad that I missed that one.
Now, is that like a game you buy in a store?
I don't think so. I think it was just a setup as a...
like a fun activity to do at the con.
Oh, so it was like a really short duration escape room. Okay.
Yeah, it's not even a room. It was just a table with him behind the table.
The escape table.
Yeah, it was an escape table.
Okay.
There are so many cool games here. I wish I had a chance to go visit them all.
Yeah, me too. Well, though we did get to see quite a few. Let's talk about the winners. I played the game that won most innovative. It was called Patrol. And Patrol : a coloring card game by Adam the Impaler. Now, this game is still in development, but it does have its basically a final model prototype is where it's at. I would take a look at it online. It had a very clever mechanic. The cards are black line art drawings, comic book style, of the characters that you have. So they're powerful characters. Each card does something different. You play them against each other in patrols. It's patrol versus patrol. Each card is one of your patrol members. They are uncolored. But if you add a color to them, meaning if you color them in, they get a power, an additional power related to that color. So there's a color reference card that tells you the additional power and you get to choose. So it's basically custom designing each card yourself based on the color you choose. Now, it also comes to make it more accessible for people who are, for example, colorblind. You also write in the power. So in case you can't see the colors well, the power is written on the card as well in a little circle. So that aids in accessibility. I liked it. I thought it was very clever. You could have basically three copies, four copies of the same card. They could each do something different based on how you colored it. And also, I thought it was a really cool idea for kids. You know, kids love to color everything they can get their hands on.
True.
And so my son spends a lot of time on Hero Machine just designing and coloring Dungeons and Dragons characters that he may never play. So it's something that I think they would be very interested in. And to get powers from coloring, really cool idea.
Yeah. Ed and I were right across from his booth all day. And, you know, with a name like Adam the Impaler, you expect him to be this like brutal dude. But he was a really sweet,
friendly guy.
Really friendly guy. Uh-huh.
Really cool.
I understand that there's a special Impaler card coming out for that.
Oh, yeah.
What's nice about it is that there are no player hit points.
Yep. Nope. It's just your card against the other one. And when one dies, that goes away.
You don't have to go and like buy a bunch of decks and start going through looking for the rare cards or the more powerful ones.
That's right. That's it exactly. And the mechanics of the game are very simple, but I think they work. They work well. It's literally just card against card.
Yeah, you have like a hand of five cards at the time, and you try to set up little teams and then play against their patrol against one of the other patrols.
So, Ed, I see that one of the games I watched you play, and we've got some footage of that or at least some pictures on our Instagram, won Best Design in Progress.
Yes, Bloon by Steve Torres, and to be published by Yanaguana Games.
Congratulations to the designer.
Yeah, it looks really cool. It's basically a tile laying game, so you draft a set of tiles. And then you try to make a flower bed, a 4x4 grid of flower bed to track bees. And on each bee, you get a few points. But you have to try to avoid buildings that the bugs on there, too. Because if you get different combinations of bugs on your flowers, you'll lose points.
Oh, cool. So it kind of has a Lanterns feel to it, sounds like.
A little bit.
It did feel a little bit like the game of Lanterns. But that added mechanic of, okay, I was timed. I built my garden. Now how many bugs are in it? And sort of don't kind of realize until maybe later.
Well, you're also, the difference is you're drafting the tile. So you're seeing tiles. You're trying to draft a certain one. You're trying to remember, well, I got to try to build that flower and that flower. And hopefully I'll get them to come out. Because you're only building a stack of two different sets.
And the winner of the CT Fig Best in Show and Best Presentation was That's Wizard.
No, it's That's Wizard.
No, That's Wizard.
That's Wizard.
Not That's Wizard.
Yes.
But That's Wizard. Or That's Wizard.
Dude, That's Wizard.
First, Ed, tell us a little bit about how the game's played.
For both players will design a deck of seven spell cards to defeat their opponent. Spells are organized into seven different schools of magic, such as Transfiguration, Charm, Divination, etc.
So you know what I think the title is? I think it's a mic drop. Yeah, that's Wizard.
Yeah, that's Wizard. Yeah.
Well, now I like the title of the game more now that I've said it about a dozen times.
I know, right? I hated it when I saw it, and now I'm like kind of liking it. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, that's Wizard.
Well, we asked them about their experience at the con, and they said that their favorite part was the atmosphere, right? The fact that it was run inside Connecticon?
They also like the game and culture. You got a plan to meet the other anime art and cosplayers there, and getting to meet the other designers. It's a great opportunity to get into the game culture.
Yeah, I'd never been to a cosplay, mostly cosplay con before. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, man, it was fabulous. Mm-hmm. It was really great costumes, heavily anime, almost primarily anime for sure. Yep. But I thought an excellent assortment of costumes. You know, Hartford's got it going on.
Yeah.
Who'd have thunk?
Video game room, too, was cool. They had like a bunch of games that didn't even have English subtitles on them. They're just straight Japanese. And if you know how to play them, go for it. And if not, good luck. It was awesome.
The CT Fig was inside the gaming room, which was basically a huge convention hall of free games to play.
All kinds of video games. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And LAN setups, video game setups, huge large screen setups, and arcade game style setups, too. It was really fabulous. A great experience for indie game designers, I think. And I think it was a two-way street. I think a lot of cosplayers got to see gamers, and gamers got to expose games to cosplayers.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was.
And another aspect, I think, is for indie developers to meet other indie developers. Just to meet like a crew of people, like-minded people, so they can bounce ideas off each other and help each other out in the gaming world.
Yeah, it felt like a big think tank sometimes, which is an atmosphere I love.
Yeah, so That's Wizard is still in development. They're in their final, they say they're in their final stages of figuring out where to get the game produced. And you can check them out at where, Ed?
They have a Facebook page called That's Wizard.
And that's our recap of the Connecticut Festival of Indie Games at Connecticon this year. It's going to be there again next year. That's the plan. Ed, when is that?
July 11th through 19th.
And there's another festival coming up soon of indie games. When's that, Ed?
Yes, it's the Boston Festival Indie Game taking place at Cambridge, Massachusetts. MIT campus, Ashley, on Saturday, September 29th.
Oh, cool. We'll be there, too. And looking forward to that and to the World Board Gaming Championships next weekend. We look forward to recapping that for you, too. And that ends our brief expedition for this week. We look forward to hearing about all the game exploring you've done. Follow us on your favorite social media site. We are at Which Game First on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. For more episodes of the show, you can become a patron through Patreon. Just go to our website and click on the Become a Patron link. If you get a chance, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps others find the show. Join our chat on our Discord server, Which Game First. And our Patreon supporters get access to exclusive channels. Happy gaming, explorers. We'll see you next week with a full episode.
See ya.
Good night.